Rip Khan Show on 720 WGN. Dr. John Duffy is joining us right now. He's been with us about once a week since this whole mess started. And Dr. Duffy, thank you. It's always a great pleasure to have you. He is the author of a book that really could not be more aptly titled, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. And I do know from parents that my friends who are parents of kids who are teenagers, this is the absolute worst perfect storm that they could go through, which is that especially if you've got, let's talk about tweens for a second here, because the tween is really where this thing can really be hitting hard. The kids who are 12, 13 years old, who are just starting, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, whatever, middle schoolers, who are just starting to socialize and want to be socialized away from their home, can't do it. And, you know, the whole idea of going to the mall or going to a movie or doing any of those kinds of things that the kids of that age try to, you know, get in the habit of doing with their friends, they can't do it. And it's they're left to either playing video games online with their friends or, you know, whatever. Yeah, basically, that's the only kind of interaction they can have, right?
You're absolutely right, Ro. And for the tweens I know and I'm working with, over the weeks, I can feel that their emotional state is kind of devolving and regressing a little bit, because that is all they're doing. So kids that were like talking to me, sitting up on a couch, FaceTiming, and, you know, really engaged, are now laying down on a bed in a dark room. And I can tell that there's another screen going somewhere else. And in all fairness, this is all they really have to do. Their options are really limited. So they're either listless or they're angry. But one way or another, they're not very well regulated emotionally or otherwise. They're not physical, they're not moving. So when you talk about a perfect storm and you specifically highlight tweens, you are right on. Like, this is as rough as it gets. If you couldn't draw a worse, more difficult parenting situation than this.
And so why is that? What is it about that 11, 12, 13 year old that makes this so hard?
So if you think about what those early teenage years and tween years are all about, part of it's about establishing a sense of self separate and apart from mom and dad. So there's not necessarily positive regard for mom and dad in those young tween years, and I'm understating that by a margin.
Oh, man, is that the truth? Yeah.
Right? And you add on top of that, this is the initial, you know, they're attracted to somebody and there's an opportunity for something to happen there. And now these days, they've got social media, which we didn't have when we were kids, that they've got to kind of contend with. So they've got all this identity traffic about, like, who am I? What identity do I tend to at any given point in time? Do I join this kind of vaping and juuling crowd over here? Or am I a jock? Or am I, you know, what group do I even belong in? How do I define myself? So there's all this confusion along with, like, familial stress and not spending any time socializing, literally going through the socialization process that's so crucial to development in this part of your life, really creates a lot of agitation. And that's what I'm hearing from parents, that they seem agitated, remote, and depressed.
So how dangerous is this in terms of it becoming a known pattern? Doctor, I mean, it's like this is the first time they're going through this. They're doing this in the age of COVID, right? And there's no, they won't have another shot at these months and years. So is this going to create a generational issue?
I'm so concerned about that, Ro. I mean, you know, as I see this thing stretching out, you know, looking already at the fall semester and more time apart, more time just with families, and this same pattern stretching almost endlessly into the future, I'm worried about exactly what you're talking about. You know, like, I, 20 years ago, I was talking about, like, let's implement social and emotional programs in schools. And I was laughed out of a bunch of schools with another colleague. Now, I don't know that we have an option come the fall or come sometime in the not too distant future to kind of find a way to jumpstart some of the arrested development for our tween age kids, because they're missing a whole piece of development with each passing week, because these kids change fast and they develop really quickly, and it's just stagnated suddenly, and they're not adapting very well. So, yes, I'm afraid it will become a pattern if we don't find a creative way to intervene.
All right. Well, let's get some phone calls in, 312-981-7200, if you've got questions for Dr. Duffy. He's here till the end. I mean, until we get these damn kids out of the house, Dr. John Duffy will be with us. Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety is the name of the book. And you mentioned that you are seeing patients now. You're seeing kids. You're a therapist, family therapist. So do you see the kids with the parents? Are you able to see how the tweens here? And we can focus on them for this particular conversation. That, are you seeing them interacting with their parents, or are you seeing them one-on-one?
Both, Ro. So I typically break up a session. I want to spend some time with that young person so they can talk kind of openly about what they're feeling, what they're going through. But I want to see how they're interacting with their parents, because there are a lot of communication problems going on in the home. And the parent observations are important as well from a therapeutic point of view. So I'm getting a piece of both of those kinds of interactions, interacting directly with the tweens, watching them interact with their parents. And sometimes that goes beautifully, and sometimes that feels like all-out familial war, depending on the household, depending on the tone being set by mom and dad, and how agitated that child is. So I'm seeing a whole range of presentation in a family. But when I get to talk to the kids themselves, I find that they have a really poor bead on how stressed out they are. So they actually underestimate their degree of stress. Oh, I'm completely fine until yeah. something happens. And then they really react powerfully. And so I'm working to get them to just recognize, oh, you're idling it high already, you know, just by virtue of the fact that you're with your family all the time and nothing is the way you expected. So you've got to recognize that. Otherwise, you're going to say or do something you regret.
I want to get to the phone calls here, but I got to take a quick break. Right before we go to the break, I want to ask you about the dynamic now of these kids, these tweens. Are you, doctor, hearing sort of the, I would imagine, rather haunting set of similar symptoms here that you weren't hearing in your practice prior?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I cannot tell you, especially in the last 2 or 3 weeks, as, you know, announcements have been made of, you know, this getting delayed further and further, the end of the shelter in place order. So much more depression, way more anxiety than I have ever seen in this age group before. And I hate to say this, I'm reluctant to say it, but substance abuse in tweens that I starting at younger and younger ages that I have not witnessed in the past.
Okay. All right. We'll get to your phone calls at 312-981-7200. If you've got a story from your family, or you've got a concern of your family, you've got, and again, it's any age kids. We're focusing on tweens right now, but if you've got younger kids or teenagers, or even kids have moved back into the house and you're like, I'm not exactly sure what to do, or maybe you've had to move back in the house and you're not exactly sure what to do with your parents, 312-981-7200. That is our telephone number. Here is Matt. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, folks. Hi, Doc. So, long story short, my nephew is 8. My niece is 12. Now, they obviously are going to be out of school for the rest of the year. I guess my nephew is young enough where he could brush it off. I'm more concerned with my niece, though. She had plans to go to the space camp, which we send her to every summer because she just loves it. That's where all her friends are, all 9 yards. When we told her that it got canceled, she pretty much had a total breakdown. So I'm worried for her socially and emotionally, or is she still young enough where she can just go, nah, screw it, next year?
That's a great question, Matt. Yeah, seriously. And all these camps are getting canceled, and I know kids get very attached to space camp. I know this is a very unique, fun experience. And the fact that she had a total breakdown is not that unusual, unfortunately. And I would love to say, oh, no, she's young enough where she will be able to brush this off and move on. But at 12, kids are really, really savvy these days, and they're kind of clicked into different types of emotional difficulties. She knows what depression is. She undoubtedly knows what anxiety is. So I don't think it's something she's going to be able to brush off, and she's going to need space to talk about the disappointment of all of this. And we usually tend, as the adults around a kid, to try to short-circuit that emotional reaction by, you know, replacing, oh, well, we'll do something else really fun this summer, or we'll find something to replace it with in some way or another, but, you know, or it's not that bad. Instead of acknowledging, like, you know what, this is a real drag. I'm so sorry you have to go through it. And then maybe saying, we'll get you back there next year. But I am finding that the acknowledgement and the recognition that this is not normal and this is not okay is really, really important for kids to hear. And it gives them permission to express how they feel and finally move on from it. So you're asking a great question.
Does that go for my 8-year-old as well, the 8-year-old nephew? Because he's just like, yay. So I don't know if it's a bad thing or not.
That's a good point.
It's a great question. And believe it or not, even your 8-year-old is kind of at the early end of pre-adolescence at 8 because of the way kids are maturing so fast these days. So even he probably needs the same treatment. It may seem like he's easy and he's letting it go, but I've talked to and worked with troubled kids as young as 7 or 8 who really do get the disappointment of situations like this. So my bias would be, do not assume he's okay. Definitely check in with him and give him permission to express how he's feeling as well, even as young as 8. Matt, you're a great uncle, man. I mean, what a treat. Seriously, right?
No, really, really. I mean, and you're totally dialed into this, too, which is really
right.
Cool. So, Matt, thank you very much, man. Appreciate it. I want to go back to something that you said, Doctor, that I think kids who are now retreating to the tweens, right? He was talking about the 12-year-old girl who really wanted to go to space camp. Now they know that their summer is totally blown up. Should we be honest with them about the fact that we don't know what the future holds either? Or should we be putting on a brave face and saying, yeah, no, it's going to be fine for next year, even though we have no idea?
We have to be honest with them. So, you know, right. To your point, I was being optimistic and saying, we'll definitely get you there next year. There is no definitelys here, right? And 12-year-olds are savvy enough to know, absolutely, every tween, to know that none of us knows what the due dates are here. None of us really knows exactly how this is going to unfold. So I may have said this here before, but it's worth repeating. If we shade the degree to which we're anxious about this ourselves, or if we try to sell them something that isn't completely true, they have way too much access to buy what we're selling. So my strong bias, and I don't love this bias, is that we have to be entirely truthful with our kids about what the reality is and the things that we don't know. That will bring their anxiety a little bit down, because at least they'll know they can rely on what we're telling them. And they need to have that pivot. They need to have that anchor for themselves. Otherwise, they're untethered, and emotionally, that does not work out very well either.
Yeah. Paul, you're on WGN. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. You're talking to Dr. Duffy, Dr. John Duffy, who is a family therapist and an expert who's written a book that basically tells us that you're not crazy. Your teenagers are tough to raise. Okay. So, Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, I love John Duffy. He's a great doctor. Hey, question for you from a historical perspective. How did children back during World War II manage the stress that was all around them?
That's actually a really good question. So there was, in a way, back in the World Wars and before, there was a lot of, like, just deal with it and bear it. And there is an argument to be made that the generation of kids now have a couple of things working against them. One is access to information. So some kids way back then were protected from some of what was going on. The other is there's an argument to be made that we were presenting them with some realities, and so they were just resilient to it. They knew they had to live through it, And they didn't have the luxury of being depressed or anxious. They were part of the family that was working, or they were still going to school and living their lives. And a lot of people in my profession, and I tend to agree with some of this, we have the time and the energy. We're wealthy enough in a way to have the convenience of being mentally unwell during this time, which sounds a little backwards, but there's some truth to that. Whereas if you go back in time, we didn't have that luxury. We didn't have the luxury of feeling terrible about things. We were in survival mode. Kids yeah. now today are not in survival mode, so they are focused elsewhere.
Well, okay, so I want to go back to that for a second, because I love this question. I think, that, Paul, you're hitting on something that a lot of people, especially people, older generation people, will say, you know, back in my day, you know, we didn't, yep. we weren't coddling these kids the way that they're being coddled now and you know, at all. But the difference, I think, between what was going on in World War II and what's going on now is that the fear that it was coming to our shores was, especially in the Midwest, was different. On the coasts, it was, especially the West Coast, there was some great concern, at least in the first days, first year of the war, that it was going to be coming there. And that, you know, that death and destruction would be coming toward them. The one experience that America had that is different than the other nations that were involved in World War II was that within about 18 months, we pretty much figured out that the United States homeland was not going to get attacked, that there wasn't that those militaries weren't really capable of doing of invading us, right? I mean, there might be one-offs, there might have been bombings and things like that, but in the Cold War that all changed. In the Cold War, that's when everybody became very, very paranoid about what was going to happen in the homeland, because, you know, the whole idea that it could be over just like that, you know, and it's, you'd never see it coming. And then, you know, these really existential questions were being constantly asked of ourselves and our families, and the duck and cover and the kids under the desks and things like that. Or now, you know, you think about the active shooter drills, you know, the kind of stress mm-hmm. of those kids. You know, now have to live with, because these are really issues of, am I going to die? It's the most essential question that a human asks themselves, you know, probably, you know, multiple times an hour, right? You know, and especially in a moment like
that. You are so right.
So, all right.
Yeah, absolutely, Ro. In the modern age, this is something that kids have on their minds. Am I going to die? And the idea of death is actually pretty prevalent in their thinking day to day. You know, the active shooter drills are definitely part of that. This is part of that as well. So even before all this, you know, the idea that there could be another 9/11, you know, like a lot of these kids weren't alive then, but they're aware of this idea that suddenly something awful could happen absolutely out of nowhere that could annihilate them.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Next week when we talk to you, I want to talk about video games, because that's the other piece of this. Now the kids are stuck at mm-hmm. home. You know, they're just basically on the joystick, you know, and that's an old term, by the way. Isn't that funny? That's like when I say joystick, everybody's going, what the hell's a joystick? What is he talking about? But that is dirty. What is that? All right, Dr. Duffy, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week, Dr. John Duffy.